Thank you guys for coming to Sex in the Digital Age. I'm Lux Alptrom. I am the CEO and publisher of Fleshbot.com, which used to be owned by Gawker Media but is now independent. We are the web's foremost blog about sexuality and adult entertainment. In addition to that, I've just been a sex educator and a writer about internet stuff for many, many years. So I'm going to quickly introduce my panelists, and then we're going to get started. One note before we do that, if you are tweeting about the panel, please use the hashtag #DigitalSex. If you are tweeting about the panel, please note that I am not going to be checking Twitter during the panel, so any comments you send to me will not actually be acknowledged. Don't ask questions that way, but we would love to see just your feedback and have you guys just vlogging the panel for people who can't be here. So please tweet away. Just don't expect an immediate response from us. And I think, yeah, those were my introductory notes. And now I'm just going to take a minute for my panelists to briefly introduce themselves. Lena?
Hi, my name is Lena Chen. I'm a sex and gender writer. In college, I started a blog called sexandtheib.com, which was about my romantic and sexual adventures while a Harvard undergrad, and I ended up being in my own sex scandal, a very minor one compared to some of the ones we're discussing today. But as a result of that, two out of my three co-panelists have already seen me naked.
I'm Maureen O'Connor. I'm a blogger for Gawker.com, and 5 years ago, I wrote about Luna's sex scandal.
I'm Mike Dax. I'm the general counsel for Avid Life Media in Toronto, Canada. We run a number of online dating websites, including some you might have heard of, like Ashley Madison, and which is very relevant to our topic today because, you know, we have various advertising limitations, and we've kind of managed to keep ourselves in the news through various PR initiatives kind of focused around various sex scandals. So looking forward.
Great. So now you see we have a very knowledgeable, diverse panel. And I just want to talk to you guys a little bit about what the inspiration for this panel was. I, a year ago, was following the news like one does, and I came across a story that you may have heard of. Anthony Weiner. I think a lot of us are familiar. For those of you who were living under a rock last year, this kind of came to a head, no pun intended, when Anthony Weiner accidentally, potentially tweeted a picture of his clothed crotch to someone. And initially they were saying that he was hacked, and then it kind of came out that actually he wasn't hacked, and he had been sending messages of a sexual nature to various women over text and over Twitter, and this became bigger and bigger story until eventually Anthony Weiner was forced to resign from Congress. And at the time that this was happening, I found myself incredibly baffled because we suddenly had this sex scandal where nobody had sex, nobody was in the same room as anyone. There were maybe some phone conversations, mostly clothed, but like some naked pictures. There was one penis picture, I think. Pretty much everything else was like shirtless and like underwear. But, you know, sexually suggestive, but for the most part not explicit photos. There was no actual proof of any infidelity because none of us really know what the arrangement that Anthony Weiner and his fiance had. That may have been completely okay, but someone who was a prominent guy on the rise, about to run for mayor of New York, very notable, very good at his job by all accounts, had his career completely derailed by what has to have been the most boring sex scandal ever. And it was very strange to me because I was like, you know, I feel like everybody that I know and most of the people in the world probably have done something like this. Many of us sext, many of us use the internet to look at pornography, many of us explore sexuality and are comfortable with sexuality in our private life. But at the same time, this becomes public, and it becomes very public because there's digital evidence of it, and we all freak out and are prudish. And that just inspired me to start thinking about the way that the internet has shaped and changed our relationship towards sexuality, and that's why we're here today. So I guess just to kick us off, I'd love to have my panelists just give a little bit of their reactions to what we can take away from this bizarre Anthony Weiner experience. Like, what were your initial reactions? What do you think of the story? Why don't we start with you, Maureen, because as the media, as a member of the media, I don't think you wrote this. You did not write this actual story, but you have written about some similar ones. So.
Yeah, well, I would say I don't think it was the most boring sex scandal. It was pretty funny. But the it is really fascinating that these people are stepping down because they haven't literally cheated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it makes us ask sort of what counts as cheating and obviously whether that even matters in terms of what someone does. But Anthony Weiner, another story that was really similar, which I covered, was Christopher Lee. He was a U.S. congressman in Buffalo. And we actually found that he had met a person on Craigslist that he emailed with, and he stepped down 2.5 hours after our first post went up about it, which was probably the fastest political sex scandal resignation ever. And it was unbelievable because he actually had had a completely PG-13 emails. It's just sort of like, hey, I'm a fit, fun, classy guy. I want to hang. That's the picture, you know, just like shirtless picture, a couple like pictures of him with his clothes on. And what also sort of became apparent was as soon as this broke, that it also became apparent that he was anticipating that the rest of his digital sex life was going to get dug up. And it's because there's sort of always a record of it, that even if it's just a flirtation, and we don't know if he ever, he could have, for all we know, only ever slept with his wife. But he was almost just sort of satiating some curiosity, it seemed, by emailing with people.
Right. Lena?
I mean, I have to say, I have kind of a sick sense of glee when someone who really seems to deserve it goes down in a huge flaming ball of fire. But when it comes to someone like Anthony Weiner, it's sort of like, well, who was really the victim here? Maybe the people that he tweeted were slightly irritated by getting cock shots in their Twitter inbox. But beyond that, the damage seems to be fairly minimal. I mean, when you have some sort of like evangelical Christian or Southern Baptist like George Wreckers get exposed for being on Rent Boy while at the same time promoting an anti-gay agenda, then at least exposing that hypocrisy leads to some sort of positive ramification where people are like, this person is a hypocrite, not to be trusted. But when it comes to things like this, it seems like it's almost just a lurid, sensationalistic interest in someone else's private life that has nothing to do with their ability to perform in the public sector.
So we were actually talking about this over the last few days, and, you know, sitting up in Toronto, Canada, we have kind of a unique view of U.S. politics, and my personal opinion and kind of the way we operate is who cares about these sex scandals? What does it have to do with whether this person is going to be a good leader? And in fact, you know, I would argue that, you know, a perfect example would be Chris Lee 2.5 hours later, he resigns. It kind of leads to you guys not having the best potential politicians and leaders, because anyone who's had any sort of life would never in their right mind go into politics in the first place in such an environment.
Sure. And I mean, the thing is, it's not that anybody actually thinks that taking your shirt off means you can't be a politician. It's just that it's really embarrassing for them because they look ridiculous. And you can know that somebody, you know, goes around trying to look sexy and sending pictures of them, you know, but it's like when you actually see the picture of like Anthony Weiner pathetically trying to look hot, it's just so awkward and funny that, I mean, I think that's why they do it, because they're embarrassed and they're embarrassed for their families and they just want to make it go away.
Yeah, because that leads to my next question, I guess, which is why do we care?
Sex and it's interesting.
Yeah. No, but not even that, but why do we care enough that these people feel compelled to resign? I mean, we all kind of know, and if I'm alerting to you this for the first time, be prepared to have your mind blown. John F. Kennedy had sex with a lot of ladies and they weren't his wife. But he, you know, was heralded as an excellent president. Lots of politicians outside of America have pretty well documented extracurricular affairs. And I guess what's interesting to me, I mean, why something that was so normal and so human became such a huge scandal? I mean, is it because we have this photo and we can't respect him now because he looks ridiculous? Is it because, you know, we've seen Anthony Weiner's penis?
I think partially it's because after you've seen Anthony Weiner's penis, you realize he's just like me. And there's a tendency to want our leaders to not just be like us, because I don't think any of us feel like we could lead a country or a state or a municipality, whatever. You know, they're not supposed to embarrass themselves like that. They're supposed to know better, and they're supposed to be superhuman people who don't have the same, you know, salacious sexual interests that any of us have at this table or in this audience.
Any thoughts over there?
I'm not sure which angle you want me to take, but You know, in the discussion we were having previously, it's kind of an interesting result of technology, and as we all use the internet for all sorts of aspects of our life, this digital footprint. And there's a question, you know, especially on our dating websites and on Ashley Madison, where our demographic is really unique amongst dating websites, where it's 40 plus, and those people aren't the most technologically savvy people, and they might not even be realizing when they send someone in a private gallery naked photo or something that that's out there, and that they should be aware that this could have consequences beyond.
Well, it's interesting because you're sort of, you... When you go like looking to have an affair on your computer, that's the same computer that you use to have your professional life. Like that's exactly why Anthony Weiner got messed up, because he was, you know, using a Twitter account that people were aware of. It sort of puts all of your different worlds and your different sort of selves all really close together. And so you're simultaneously empowered to go really far, to be sort of more explore things you might not explore in real life. You might not want to go, you know, cruising for sex with strangers, but maybe you'll do it on the internet. But it's simultaneously, you're able to do more, but then it's also, everything is like closer together somehow. And the sort of, the risk of like a slight slip is greater.
Mm-hmm. This just occurred to me. My sister has an anthropology background, and when Facebook first came out, she told me one of the things that made her incredibly uncomfortable about Facebook is that it took away her ability to do code switching. Because when she talks to my mother, she addresses her very differently than she addresses me. She presents a different self to her work than she does to her friends. But suddenly, actually, it might have even been with Friendster. It might have been pre-Facebook, my God. With the internet, she had one profile, one self, and this inability to have nuance and variation. And perhaps one of the things that's coming up with digital sex is we're so used to code switching between like our sexual selves and our public selves, and when we have this digital log and these digital accounts that we're kind of using one for a lot of different things, it's flattening our persona, and we're unable to code switch. We're unable to be Chris Lee, the sexy shirtless man who maybe wants to flirt with a cross-dresser, and have that be separate from Chris Lee, I guess I'm not covering it up there because my hand doesn't translate there. But I was trying to cover the shirtless photo to separate that from Chris Lee, the congressman. But I do like this point that's coming up that, you know, it's embarrassing and it's human. And maybe it's not so much that we can't handle the idea that our politicians are having sex because it's sex, so much as we have this idea that they are somehow flawless.
Well, I think it's seeing it that I think makes the biggest difference. Like, you can know that, you know, George W. Bush was a frat boy who got drunk all the time, but you've never seen a picture of him in a pool of his own vomit. And as soon as you see that, it gets a lot harder to sort of, it's almost like we're in this sort of like, I don't know, like a sophomore phase or something where we know that everybody does this. Now we're seeing the pictures. Can we get over just the dilemma of seeing somebody look totally ridiculous or seeing something really private and sort of letting go of that? Because, you know, this is a generation that's grown up where everybody's going to have ridiculous pictures somewhere, and just sort of everybody's ridiculous moments are captured on, as, you know, a digital image somewhere.
Yeah. I want to take a slightly different tack now and touch on something we mentioned briefly, and that's this idea of infidelity. Because the internet's great in that it's given us these many different ways to explore sexuality. I mean, 100 years ago, there's no way that you could have some sort of sexual, very explicit sexual relationship with someone half a globe away. I mean, I suppose maybe you could send them dirty telegrams, but it's not quite the same thing. But it's also created this weird question where, again, like, was Anthony Weiner... I guess I'm just going to ask, was Anthony Weiner cheating on his wife? What do you guys think? Is it somehow infidelity to send someone a naked picture? Is that sex to send someone a picture of your genitals and some sexually explicit texts?
I mean, I don't think we can answer that question without knowing more about Anthony Weiner's private life, right? We'd have to ask his fiance. We wouldn't be able to judge that for ourselves, because in their relationship, that might not be cheating.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think there are plenty of relationships in which that is cheating, though.
But, you know, for all we know, they could have an open relationship. See, that's what I'm saying. Like,
anyway. Yeah, so they could. You would, I mean, it's whether that counts as a sex act, I guess.
Yeah.
Sexting with somebody. And if you think of phone sex, you know, like, it's you know, but if it's an act you do with another person that gives you some level of sexual gratification, that's, you know, somewhere on the sliding scale of sex.
Right. But, and I, you know, we were talking about this earlier, but there are almost certainly politicians who have beards as their wives, but are actually having sex with men, or politicians who are in open marriages, but they're not going to talk about it, because if they do, it's a political liability.
I think I'll jump in on this part of the conversation.
You have some experience with infidelity.
So I personally don't.
Professionally.
Exactly. You know, and really, amongst the reasons that Ashley Madison was founded, you know, was this concept of affairs and flirtations going on within the workplace, which is obviously can lead to messes for everyone involved. And this question of, you know, is it infidelity? Is it cheating on your spouse if you're flirting with someone in the office? If you're chatting online, what's the line to cyber sex? And, you know, Maureen spoke about we're kind of in this sophomoric age of using the internet, and I absolutely agree with that, where, at what point is the fact that you were surfing porn, is your browser history going to be the strike against you in running for office or in trying to get that job or a promotion? And I think we all agree, but I personally believe that, you know, as our generation grows up and takes positions of power, we're all going to be much more open with how we've all lived our lives, and none of this is going to matter, and really merit and how well you can do what you're there to do will be the defining factor, and not these ridiculous points on the side that really make no difference.
Yeah. I mean, I think I do want to also just talk a little more about infidelity, because I think beyond just this idea of an expanded definition of sex and therefore cheating and more opportunities to cheat depending on how we are defining it. Because I do think Lena does make an excellent point that what is cheating is very much dependent on the strictures of your own relationship. As, you know, for some people, sexting someone is no big deal. For other people, even just looking at someone is potentially a violation. But I think what's also particularly interesting when we think about the internet and sex and infidelity is that the internet's just made it so much easier. I think as you just kind of touched on, Ashley Madison has made it so you don't have to take the liability of like flirting with your secretary and potentially putting your job at risk. Now you can go to a online space from the privacy of your home. You don't have to leave your house. You don't have to face-to-face meet anyone, but you can connect online. And this is part of just like the larger point of how I think that the internet's opened us up to sexuality by giving us the freedom to explore a diverse array of things that we might not even be interested but just be curious about at a very low risk to ourselves. You don't have to leave your house. You don't really have to go out and do work. You don't have to find people. Nobody has to see your face if you don't want. And I think because of that, it's almost become easier to have an extramarital affair. I think it's become easier to do a lot of these things that people weren't necessarily able to do. But it's also become easier to do it in such a way that you don't even get beyond the curious stage, but you're still labeled. You're still labeled someone who is...
And is that label fair? And according to who? You know, are we only talking about public figures? Because we've also been talking offline about people like Lena or people who aren't in the public sphere at large who have had situations. Who's judging who and for what purpose?
Let's switch away from politicians, because as fascinating as politicians' sex lives are, there are a couple of other people, like all of us, who are affected.
Actually, politicians' sex lives are not that exciting compared to the rest of us.
Well, there's that, too. I was being slightly facetious. So one of the reasons why Lena is on this panel is, as she mentioned, she was embroiled in her own sex scandal 4 years ago when she was... when she was a student at Harvard. So I do, in a minute, want her to kind of speak to that experience. But Lena's not the only person who is a relatively private figure who has suddenly become the object of public attention for doing very little aside from having sex and being sexual in a semi-public way. So I have brought up the story on Jezebel about this woman, Karen Owens, just to give you guys a little bit of background if you're not familiar with the story. Karen Owens was a Duke student, While she was at Duke, she put together a PowerPoint fuck list, as you can see, where she was basically just writing about and rating various men, some of whom were student athletes, that she had had sex with. And so, you know, she put their pictures, she wrote, like, little anecdotes about them, she rated them based on cock size, and she sent it to her friends. And it was intended, as my understanding, it was intended to be, you know, haha, here's a funny thing that I made for my friends. It's girls just talking about sex, haha. Not surprisingly, it got forwarded around beyond her friends, and it started to go viral at Duke. And then from Duke, it got sent to Gawker Media, where it was written about, as you can see, on Jezebel, also on Deadspin. From there, it just became this national story. Even the Today Show covered it, which is bizarre. 2 days in a row. Thank you. Thank you, Erin. Erin Carmen, as you can see, byline there. So 2 days in a row, the Today Show, which is not a show about sex, really, decided to cover this story. And it's very fascinating because this is not a public figure. This is a college student. Granted, somebody at an elite university, but this is a college student who wrote, you know, about her sex life, was intending to share it with some friends, and suddenly it became a viral thing. It's actually really similar to Lena's story in that Lena was, you know, college student at an elite university writing about her sex life. I believe you told me your blog was mainly intended for your friends initially.
Yeah.
But because I think especially when you're young and female and at an elite university, because we all care about what college students do for some reason, it becomes like this focus point of interest about sex, like smart young women talking about sex are suddenly a national story. And why? I guess why are we so fixated on that? And why is this person who is really quite frankly a nobody suddenly a national press figure because they decided to write about some dudes they boned?
Well, that's what I find really interesting about the internet, right? It's sort of like a leveling field for everyone's ego. You can be a politician or you can be a nobody college student somewhere, and both of you can become famous for the same ridiculous, perverted things. And in my case, I was already a semi-public figure because I was already writing about sex, but why my naked photos would be relevant to anyone other than the psycho ex-boyfriend who posted them up on the internet is beyond me. I do think that a lot has changed since 2008. When my photos were posted to the internet without my permission. In the time since, there's all these initiatives against cyberbullying, and obviously there's a lot of awareness now around the fact that gay youth are at extreme risk of depression and suicide, not just because of, you know, in-school bullying, but because they're mocked online and because some of them are embroiled in their own, like, little sex scandals. And there's the whole controversy over Phoebe Price and what happened to her. So I think that we are in a transitional period where people are kind of learning what the limits are of the internet, what the dangers are, and also how to manage the extreme freedom it's given us. Because on one hand, it's a huge blessing that we have people who are able to explore their sexuality and their identities in spaces that they didn't have access to before and that they might not be able to access in the real world, right? I do a lot of work with queer youth. And the thing is, I answer questions about sex ed for girl.com and a website called bedsider.org. And some of the biggest questions I get are, Lena, I want to find someone who can talk to me about being gay or questioning, or I want to explore my sexuality, and they can't, right? But now you have the internet for that, and you can't do that. But the question is, if people aren't properly educated on what the risks are, we have a lot of kids or we have middle-aged people who just aren't as internet savvy as the people who are at this conference or at this table who are putting themselves in danger. And some of the ramifications can be really serious, really depressing. So I think after a few years when people sort of realize that the internet is a bit of a wild, wild west and we get acclimated to what internet culture and what internet sex culture is like, we'll have people making more informed decisions, and hopefully those spaces will become truly safe and inclusive spaces.
I actually, funny that you mentioned that, I actually do a talk called Safer Sexting, which is about the fact that, you know, we know we all know if you're going to have sex with someone, you are taking certain risks. You have certain preventative measures that you can take to reduce those risks. And if all hell breaks loose and you end up in a really unfortunate situation, we have crisis management situations. Like, we know I could get an STI, I could get pregnant, I could get my heart broken. I can use condoms, I can take birth control, I can talk to my friends. If I get pregnant, I can get a termination, I can go to the doctor, etc. We don't have that for digital sex, which I find is really interesting because there's nothing dramatically more risky about sexting than there is about actually having sex. But because we don't really talk about it in an intelligent framework where we're like, we know that you do this, you do that, you do that, we're just kind of baffled, and it creates a really...
Like what? Like you don't take pictures of yourself?
Yeah, or
that's the equivalent of a condom for sex.
Yeah, I would say, you know, you don't put your face in the picture. You use a pseudonym. You use like PGP keys on your emails. You do all this stuff, you know, or you are aware that it could get out, you know, like, yeah. So I think we don't have that.
I have a question for you. So I totally agree with the kind of line of thinking you're on, but at what point, if you're, you know, from a dating site perspective, or just how people meet online, and, you know, if they want to take that online relationship into real life,
yes,
like at what point do you tell the guy or girl your real name, what you really do, who you really are? Do you keep up the facade for a month on the third date?
I think a lot of that is just a personal comfort thing. I mean, I also feel like I'm going to go back about anonymity, because I think what's interesting to me when we talk about anonymity and sexuality and anonymity online, is in recent years there's been a lot of a push towards this like real name initiative. Google+ is real names only. Facebook is real names only, even though it's obviously possible to skirt that should you decide to, because what a real name is sort of up in the air. But there's been this idea that you shouldn't be anonymous on the internet, and if you're anonymous, you're ashamed, because in real life, you're not anonymous, which is actually bizarre and completely untrue, because if you think about the way people explore sexuality or explored sexuality, especially fringe sexuality, before the internet, you know I have friends who used to go to sex clubs and have seen names. And they, you know, they were public school teachers, and they had names that they would go have kinky sex under that were not their names and not connected to their daytime identity. I think that using a pseudonym on the internet is kind of corollary to that. That doesn't mean that when you meet the person, you're still like Big Cock 224. But if you're creating, and this goes back to a point that we've made, if you're creating a digital record, which is really where a lot of this becomes dangerous, you do that digital record under something that's not necessarily going to be your government name. And it's not because I think that we should be ashamed, but I think that there is something to be said for privacy. I think that, you know, there's something to be said for being able to maintain this separate self, not because there's anything wrong with having sex, but because it's just a part of humanity that we sometimes like to not necessarily tell everyone everything. But I actually want to back up a little bit and just ask you, Maureen, going back to the Karen Owens, going back to this idea of people who aren't really public figures becoming public figures, because obviously Gawker's kind of driven some people to celebrity willingly and both unwillingly. And I guess I would really love to hear your perspective as a journalist on, you know, why do we write about Karen Owens? Why is it somehow so interesting when someone who's not a celebrity at all does something somewhat sexual, somewhat publicly?
Do you not find it interesting? I think it's interesting because it's sex and it's interesting. And, you know, hot young nubile college girls talking about sex. Like, the story about, so 5 years ago when what happened with Lena was that a psycho ex-boyfriend posted a bunch of naked pictures and started sending them around. So I, at the time, was a college gossip blogger, and he kept posting the links in the comment section of our blog, and they were getting sort of sent around schools, and so I wrote about it. And looking back now, like, it's sort of, I mean, it would be a mistake to look at what I did when I was, you know, like, 21 and in college with the same level of, like, editorial scrutiny I apply as a professional now. But at the time, what I thought was, like, well, everybody's talking about it anyway, so I'm going to write it. Although, the reason that it's, like, slightly a false logic is because if I hadn't written it, it wouldn't have, there'd be not as much of a record. like Lena successfully got the photos taken down most places, but what I have then and going on for I think like 2 years or three after I was not affiliated with this college blog at all, it was still Ivy Gate's number one post because mm-hmm. you'd be searching for like naked yes. pictures and you would end up there. And it was because we were just talking about it, but even just talking about it that now that there's a record that it ever happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is true that if I hadn't written about it, it, you know, might be more, it's also sort of mind blowing that Lena and I ended up being friends.
Yes, we're friends.
Given
now.
That we met after that.
There is no ill will.
Also, but. I mean, it's worth noting, if you hadn't written about it, it wouldn't have been picked up by Gawker and Fleshbot and,
no, certainly.
And numerous other larger things.
But it's the same as, I mean, it's any world of whatever gossip world you're writing about. Like, you know, each person writes it, and then it potentially meets a bigger audience. Mm-hmm. And it is sort of a responsibility. But, like, in our world, Lena was a public figure in that tiny world that I was operating in. And in that, like, the little world of gossip that I was writing about, you know, like, a certain number of universities. So to us, that was like our winner gate at the time, you know?
This is why I get a little sick thrill every time someone else gets embroiled in a sex scandal. Because I'm like, seriously, it normalizes the behavior, right? I almost feel like the more private individuals who get affected by it, the less serious it becomes for everyone overall. I mean, the day when there is no such thing as an internet sex scandal is the day when our society truly stops being fucked up around sex.
I mean, will that right? ever happen? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe but. Not. But the reason that, I mean, people are interested in this in sort of a sick way because they are curious. There is some curiosity around that. And I don't know if that's just because infidelity is taboo and, like, it's fun to laugh at people being, you know, toppled off a high horse. But I think that when it comes to private individuals, that fascination is particularly interesting to me because I don't see how my own sex life is relevant to anyone else's. And I'm sure Karen Owens feels the same way, right?
Yeah. I actually want to talk about this idea of a time when we don't have internet sex scandals by bringing up another politician. Crystal Ball, really actually her name. Unfortunately, but
between Crystal Ball and Wiener, you just can't pick better names.
I know. I mean, why don't these? I don't know. She seems like a very lovely person. But to give you guys some background, Crystal Ball was running for Congress in 2010. She was actually in her 20s, very minor candidate. Nobody really knew that much about her. And then this photo surfaced. I believe she's at a Halloween party. As you can see, she's apparently a sexy Santa. That is her husband to her left, who is some sort of dildo-nosed Rudolph. And this became a big scandal, if you will. But what's interesting, she didn't win, did she?
No, she was honestly,
a really long shot candidate.
She was a really, real long shot. And honestly, some of the scandal in some ways, like, has kind of made her career in some ways because yeah. she would never have been on, you know, she didn't go on TV, she didn't have a national presence, nobody was going to publish an editorial by her, and not that like, oh, you should be grateful, but it's that she went on TV all the time, and then now she is a contributor at MSNBC. So like she wrote an editorial about, you know, what it is to be a woman at her age and, you know, working in politics and also having a sex life, and she was able to actually, you know, make statements that everybody read kind of because of all this, and she wasn't ashamed of it, which was really interesting. And she also pointed out that everybody her age has some dumb college party picture somewhere of them looking ridiculous.
So then I guess the question becomes, what makes her, you've touched on some of it obviously just now, but what's interesting to me is this the future and what makes it different? I mean, she was able to capitalize on getting her private photo leaked in such a way that she was a long shot candidate who is now a more established presence and was able to turn it in her favor. I think it's kind of worth noting that A, she's not naked. It's more sexually suggestive than sexually explicit. So, and there's no apparent infidelity. This is her husband.
Although it's her ex-husband. One thing fascinating about her, but it's that she has a really extreme personality. Just to be in your mid-20s, married twice, and running for Congress. Like, she was actually kind of a fascinating person that I think none of us would have known that if she had come up that way.
But I mean,
her name is Crystal Ball.
Yeah.
She's a fascinating human.
But I mean, so I just, yeah, just reading, she does have some mitigating factors where, you know, she wasn't cheating on anyone. There was no actual sex. There were no nude photos. But it was something where, rather than retire in shame, she managed to capitalize on it. And I guess, do we see this becoming the future? Is this like a Facebook generation thing where eventually when people like Crystal Ball are, instead of just like the young up-and-comers, the establishment, are we going to be able to be like, we don't care. We've all taken naked pictures of ourselves. Who gives a shit? Do we think that's the future? Does this portend for?
I mean, Yeah, go. I was going to say, it can be the future. I mean, like, if everyone in this room right now tweeted a shot of their genitals, maybe that would be step one.
You are the revolution guy. Pull out your camera.
Towards desensitizing.
The only way to solve this.
Hashtag digital sex.
I think there's something interesting there. You know, Ashley Madison operates in 18 countries and a lot of Western Europe, and all these taboos we're talking about are really uniquely American. You know, you look at Italy, their prime minister owns the media, has sex with all sorts of young
ladies.
But they
do write about it, like, every single day in their tabloid.
Absolutely.
You can say, like, oh, they're so much more European and liberal-minded than us. But it's a tabloid fascination there, too.
For sure, but at the same, you know, it seems that it doesn't affect people's public lives or their ability to...
Well, it ended up sort of affecting his, but...
They're not retiring from politics.
Exactly.
I mean, it's affecting... I think people maybe think Berlusconi's a scumbag, but Berlusconi has a job.
Mm-hmm. Well, he doesn't now.
But for other reasons. But he had a job. You wrote this lovely defense of her. Do you think that this is a strategy?
That was actually in defense of teasing her.
Oh, okay.
Because she wrote in, she said that everybody was slut-shaming her. And I fully appreciate that the context of anytime you see a woman in a sexy whatever, somebody is going to come out and try to shame her. On the other hand, I think one thing that is false about that is, you know, if there was any male politician with a dildo on his nose, I sure as hell would have published that picture, too.
Right. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with publishing a picture. But do you think her strategy, do you think there's... What if Anthony Weiner, instead of A, stonewalling and lying at first and saying he was hacked, and then kind of refusing to talk about stuff, and then sort of crying. What if he had said, hey, it's none of your business. This is a matter between me, myself, and my wife, and our country is in the shitter right now, and I would like to get back to work. Do you guys think that, what would the response have been?
I think some people have done that, like Dave Vitter sort of.
Newt Gingrich actually did that in one of the debates. I'm not saying he's a good guy or anything, but he successfully twisted the CNN, I think it was John King's question, right off the bat, stemmed it off, said this is a ridiculous way to open a debate when the country's in the shitter, we have real issues to talk about. So I think that is a potential strategy for people to get out of these situations.
And it's interesting, actually, that I keep forgetting about Vitter, that he's someone who solicited prostitutes and is, in general, a really awful person. Not because of soliciting prostitutes, but many other reasons. But still has a career, whereas someone who is actually, you know, advocating for the people, pretty good politician, sends a naked picture to someone, is now humiliated. And, I mean, I guess part of it is really just tenacity. And
the picture, like, if we had pictures of, you know, Dave Vitter being Diaper Dave, I'm sure things would be very different.
True. I mean, which I guess one of the things that came up in our discussions prior to this is that one of the huge things that has changed our relationship towards sexuality and particularly public figures is that now that it's so easy to create a photo record and have it disseminated so easily because digital photos are just a click to send. It's harder to, you know, you can know that JFK had sex. You can know that Bill Clinton put a semen stain on a dress. But if you don't see the picture of it, if that's sort of something you know but don't really know, it's a lot easier to get away from and forget, I guess. And what's happening now is that not only are we aware that everyone and their mother and our elected officials are having sex and doing all this stuff, but we're now confronted with a very public record. And I guess
can I ask, yeah. Lena, are you mad at me?
No. I mean, I do have to say that I think part of the reason why I'm not mad at you is because we were both very young at that point, and this was like pre-Twitter. Maybe it wasn't pre-Twitter, but it was certainly like, it was before any of this stuff happened. Mm-hmm. And I think that nowadays when I see people like Karen Owens being exposed and having done nothing to ask for it, it makes me very, very, very angry because I know exactly what it is they must be going through. And when it happened to me, I was already semi-public, and I am a sex and gender writer, so at least it has something to do with my occupation, whereas this poor girl, like, she, all she did was want to make her friends laugh, you know?
So do you think it's unethical for someone to cover that kind of thing?
I don't know. You know, I don't think there is a black and white answer to that because each situation is different, right? I don't do the type of writing that would lead to me covering the sex scandal of someone's private lives. But I also feel like you, Maureen, have different personas, right? You are Maureen, a journalist, and you're also Maureen, a person with, you know, a private life. And those two personas sometimes act in conflict with each other, as my professional persona acts in conflict with my, you know, private persona as well. So I think that that's, I mean, so if you ask me if I'm mad at you for that, like, no, I'm not, because, like, we were kids at the time, right?
Are you, sorry, not to hijack it. These are all the questions I've been wanting to ask Lena for, like, years now. But, I mean, because you aren't a sex blogger anymore, correct?
No, and this is precisely why. I stopped writing about my personal sex life because I didn't want to expose myself or my partner to that level of scrutiny anymore. But maybe one day the internet will be a place where I feel safe doing that again. This is just not that time.
Do you regret sex in the Ivy?
Nope. No regrets. No regrets. Because I think I've learned from it, and I think I'm stronger for it. But I also believe that I'm a very rare exception, and there are a lot of people like Anthony Weiner, like Karen Owens, who the internet will, like, run, who will run out on the internet because they're not prepared to handle the consequences. And I think that's the really sad thing. I mean, even if no one is knocking down your door trying to get an interview with you and you don't have to, like, confront that face-to-face, people on the internet can be really cruel and really vicious. So they can get in your head even if they can't get in your home.
I think we talked 5 years ago. You said your parents weren't aware of Sex and the Ivy.
No, my parents weren't aware of it then, and they are now.
I'm going to cut this off, as fascinating as it is. I actually just want to go to questions. So if people have questions, if you can start forming a line behind that microphone there, because I don't think we have a traveling microphone, but right in the middle of the aisle, there's a microphone. But before we go to questions, just do any of my panelists have something, any final thoughts that we want to share?
Sure.
Anyone?
I think this discussion is fascinating and kind of riffing off the concept that we're in the sophomoric age of the internet. It's such a powerful tool that we are so lucky to be growing up with. And, you know, it's just a fascinating thing that we have all this freedom both to communicate with others and for self-realization, that it's just a fascinating topic that we're all going to need to get our heads around. I actually thought it was a hilarious idea. I'm not sure that I'm ready to participate myself. If everyone in the world just took a picture of themselves naked, posted on the internet, no one would care about any of this.
The internet would collapse.
Yes.
There's not enough bandwidth in the world for that.
There's actually a friend of mine, Rachel Schuchert, who's a writer. During the Anthony Weiner scandal, at the very beginning of it, she posted a picture of her crotch in, like, gray men's briefs or whatever he'd been wearing. And she's like, "We are all Weiner." Maureen, any final things you want to say?
No, not really. I feel like we kind of covered most of it.
Okay. Lena?
Nope. No final thoughts. Don't post naked photos of yourself on the internet. But if they do get virally distributed, try to get to know the journalists. Because you just might become friends.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've touched on this. The thing that I would say that I think is really important is that We're kind of at a tipping point now, and we're at a place where privately we are very, I'd say privately we're pretty comfortable with sex, and we're all kind of, you know, free to explore things. A lot of people look at porn, a lot of people, you know, online personals, a lot of people are comfortable knowing that they can look up sexual health on the internet, but publicly we're still stuck in an era where a group of middle-aged men are able to tell me whether or not I can have birth control. And I think that because we have this disconnect between sexual freedom and sexual repression, that, you know, when evidence of someone's sexual freedom comes to light, as it will because of digital archiving, we are up against this public discourse where, you know, we're very conservative and repressive, and that's kind of what causes the scandals. That's what forces people to resign and forfeit their careers. But I do think, as we kind of touched on, I do think crystal ball is sort of the wave of the future, and that as more and more of you, as more and more people who use the internet, who are comfortable with their sexuality, who are able to say, I've taken a naked picture of myself because I have an iPhone, and who the fuck doesn't do that? Come on. So more and more of us are able to say that, then, you know, the next Anthony Weiner, we can just say, we don't care. We care about what he's doing or what she is doing as a politician. And I think when we can do that, that's going to make us stronger. So we've got 15 minutes. Erin.
Hi, everybody. So I feel not defensive about the Duke Fuck List, which I published, but I wanted to add some context because I do feel bad about the way that things played out. We talked about this too, like on some level, like Maureen, if you feel like you write something for Ivygate, you think it's for a bunch of college students, and you don't realize that really anything on the internet can be picked up in sort of scale. So from our perspective, there was this chronicle of sex that was incredibly honest and detailed and funny, and we took her, I didn't publish her name, and we blanked out the faces of the guys, and we blacked out their names. Deadspin published it like an hour later with all the info.
Did you honestly think that nobody was going to figure out who she was when you did that?
I mean, honestly, you know how decisions are made in Gawker Media? You have no time to think about it. Like, you're just like, shit, I got to do this before everyone else. And So I insisted on all the blacking out because I just felt like this is what I'm comfortable with. But again, Jezebel, when I worked at Jezebel, I mean, part of our job was to write about sex and young women. Mm-hmm. To me, really what I was shocked by was wall-to-wall cable coverage of this. And frankly, you know, Jezebel's audience was very upset about it because they were like, you violated the consent of those guys. And that was what, I do have a question, that was my question, yeah, is what is, especially for you, Lena, what responsibility do you think one bears to partners in exposing sex life on the internet? Does the experience belong to you? Or are you violating the other person that you had, or other people that you had the sexual encounter with, when you write about it or when you post a photo?
So in college, I wrote about a number of sexual encounters with a ton of different guys. And I always wrote about these things using pseudonyms, so that unless someone was literally with me the night when I was hooking up with this guy, they would not know who it was. In 2008, about 6 months after my naked photos were put on the internet, I had just started dating my now current boyfriend, and he was outed on the internet. And he was the first person in the 3 years I wrote that blog who ever got outed as a result of being involved with me. And after he got outed, I stopped writing Sex in the Ivy, and I stopped writing about my personal life for that very reason, because I felt responsible for exposing people in my personal life to a great deal amount of risk that they had never signed up for. And in the years since then, my friends, my family, my sister, my readers, who I've not even met before, have all been outed on the internet as a result of being associated with me, a sex writer. So I think for the time being, I'm not going to even touch the topic again, because I do think we're in a transitional period where there are some people who get very riled up about this stuff, and I think that I would feel much less ethically confused about the situation if it weren't for the fact that there are people who are very willing to go on the attack against anything that doesn't sit well with their own set of very conservative, backward sexual ethics.
I think for me, I mean, I don't do this frequently, but I have in the past written about sexual partners and written about sexual experiences, and I always use pseudonyms and I try to obscure details. Like most recently, I wrote something for like Good Magazine's Deal Breakers column, which is basically what it sounds like, and I just wrote about someone who, they were allergic to my cat, and that ended up being a deal breaker, among other things. But when I was writing about that, I was like, how do I feel about this? Like, what level of detail am I comfortable revealing about this person? And I altered their name, and I didn't really give out any kind of identifying information. But I did think a lot about that, and I think about that every time I write about someone. I think there's a lot of, more recently I've actually done a comic about stuff that happened when I was 23. And I've thought a lot about, like, what kind of detail. I always use fake names, And I try to not really write that much detail about the other person unless it's relevant, because for me, so much of what I am writing about is internal and my own experience, and that's what's interesting, and not the other person and what they've done. But I think that it kind of goes beyond just sex, because a lot of personal experiences that I would write about, I would not feel comfortable outing the person by name or making it about them unless I had their explicit consent. I mean, I think that we tend to silo sexuality as something totally different that must have completely separate ethical policies, but a lot of how I feel about writing about sex is how I would feel about writing about anything that was somebody's personal life that involved with me. Like, just any sort of experience, I don't know, even if it wasn't sex, I would not feel comfortable writing about it with someone's name unless they had given me permission, because there's so many reasons why people might not want that out there. Next question.
Hi. So I actually live in Queens, and Anthony Weiner was my congressman, and my apartment was like three blocks from where his office was. That was a real shit show when that was going on. But I think the bigger problem is that whenever you have, there's a difference between a picture of you drunk and in your pool of vomit in college or naked from college, and then when you're sitting in office and that's your current job and you have either as a congressman or a mayor, a certain level of power and responsibility and access to things. I think for me, just sitting there watching him, thinking immediately, oh, buddy, stop. You have to step down. What are you doing? Because it was the lying. It was just showed a lack of judgment. Mm-hmm. And I think more than anything else, yes, when you're a politician or anybody with a certain amount of access to power or money, you need to exercise a certain level of judgment. And I think that's kind of whether you're at some place now or whether you think you want to go there. Mm-hmm. If you're going to have access to things, people are going to judge you differently. And so that's kind of what I took away from that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Hi. I work for the National Dating Abuse Helpline, and so we write about sexting, and we write about, online sex lives in the context of healthy relationships. And I was wondering, hearing these stories and looking at these news examples, there's a lot of other dynamics at play here. You know, you mentioned it was an ex-boyfriend who posted that picture, and also I wonder that we don't talk about, were these pictures consensual and all of those things. I'm wondering both how nonprofits can help work with journalists to further the discussion past, the sensationalizing sex and move it towards other dynamics that, are happening outside of this.
I would love to hear what you have to say. I would say first, I think it's great that you bring up issues of consent and kind of in a domestic abuse context, because I think that a lot of, both with sex and just with sexting and with a lot of this, it goes back to what I was trying to say about how we don't have a framework for digital sex, and what's often not really the issue. It's not really the issue that someone posed for naked pictures. It's that they were distributed without their consent. It's that some sort of abuse happened and the digital part was just the medium. And I think what we really need to do is sort of learn about just digital privacy and safety precautions with regards. We just need to become more digitally literate, really, before we incorporate digital technology in such a personal aspect of our lives. But I would say, I think just kind of highlighting and focusing on issues of the fact that this is still about consent more than it is about cell phones, and just vocally talking about that and reminding people that there's like issues of abuse, even if it's some sensationalistic like digital media story. Mm-hmm. How do you think they can work with journalists?
I don't think that it will never sort of not be sensational when you're seeing sexy pictures of, a politician or whatever. I do think it's true that, say, the push to have people talk about consent, that is something that did end up sort of influencing the media. And I think that everybody talks about all these sort of sex scandals in those terms now. But as for, sex is sex, and it's going to be sensational, and there will be somebody who sensationalizes it. Although I do think it's true that, having people have discussions about what the values at play are and what matters or what doesn't matter, I think that does influence the way people cover it. And, sometimes we feel ashamed of our sensationalization, but it'll happen regardless.
Yeah, the journalism is a beast that you sort of have to try to work with, but can't always.
I do have to say I've been very heartened by the coverage of cyberbullying, on the other hand, I think is very inspiring. I think once kids get involved, people who are viewed as truly innocent killing themselves over this, I mean, that actually wakes people up to the fact that the level of sexual repression in our society is really disturbing. And so I think that is kind of, you know, like negative circumstances led to this awareness, but nonetheless, that's one positive thing that's come out of this. Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Gisley.
Hey. So I work in the adult industry, and every person involved has to fill out 2257 paperwork and model release forms and this and that, and it's a pretty controlled product. And whenever I see, for example, this picture is probably fine, but like if it was a more explicit picture, I just wanted to like gauge your thoughts on like the idea of privacy versus piracy and like what it means to, like, you know, we're talking about consent as well, what it means to have people's images, out there with this kind of like uncontrolled, everyone's their own press, you know, we're all self-publishers online and I don't know, just like who's responsible for it and like just differences between privacy and piracy.
So that's a really interesting topic, and I am a lawyer, and in the porn industry, you guys are doing that for commercial gain, as opposed to some of these things where, A, they might be kind of put out there into the cybersphere anonymously, and like, what are you going to do, have people you sleep with sign a non-disclosure agreement or a release form, depending on whether they'd like these things to get out or not? But I agree that there is something that it's going to, you know, court systems evolve to societal norms very slowly, and it's going to take 20, 30, 40 years, but at some point, maybe it will be some sort of slap on the wrist ticket or fine, the same way if you throw a rock through someone's window, I don't know. But sure, maybe there is something here about violating even just John Doe's personality rights or right to his own image. And I don't know how effective any of that would be in outing any of these photos, especially in the WikiLeaks era, but
How do you deal with that at Fortnite?
Yeah, actually, I can speak to what the current legal strategy is. I don't try to out private citizens, but yeah, if there's a celebrity nude photo, we'll run them. And for me, the justification is partly just about normalizing the fact that everybody has nude photos, and it's sensationalistic when it's a celebrity, but I'm like, hey, look, everybody's sexed. Let's deal with this. But what happens is I've run numerous stories, most recently Olivia Munn and Christina Hendricks, Jessica Biel, Scarlett Johansson, like lots and lots and lots of celebrities. And what happens, it used to be, I actually had this wonderful conversation with Kevin Blatt, who is the guy who brokered Paris Hilton sex tape deal and has done numerous other ones. And he told me, you know, it used to be that these lawyers would come after me and they'd be like, right to privacy, blah, blah, blah. And if you're a celebrity, you don't really get to use the right to privacy argument. It's a long, complicated thing they're not going to go into. But when you're a public figure, the expectation of privacy is just different. So what ended up happening was one day Kevin Blatt sat down with this lawyer, Marty Singer. So you've probably gotten some letters from him because he's the Hollywood lawyer. And he was like, look, guys, this privacy thing is bullshit. It's not going to work. If you want to actually come after these people, you have to do a DMCA takedown, which is a copyright thing. So actually, since you kind of mentioned that in piracy, the way celebrities attack it and what's going to end up happening in the future is they come at publications and say, this is copyrighted material, you don't have the right to run it. And if you're tenacious, then you write back and say, blah, 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 fair use, this is the story, yada, yada. If you're smart, you'll eventually give up because if it goes too far, it's often just not worth taking it to court, as Gawker kind of learned with, like, Gawker did go to court for McSteamy, Eric Dane.
Yeah, I don't know, but yeah, before me.
But right. But that was the thing where it went to court and they didn't really want to. And
like, Scarlett Johansson was successful at getting all her naked pictures down because she took them by herself. And so she said, I own the copyright to that.
No, no.
That's also why, for instance, like, the Miss America, remember, that had those masturbation tapes? They never went out because she was the solo performer and she was also the, like, a filmer of it. So
right.
She was able to say that she owned the copyright to it.
I mean, that's what's happening. The legal strategy is if you want to take it down, you say, I'm the copyright owner. Next question. And I think this is our last question. Unfortunately.
Yeah, I was just curious. You used two phrases in that answer. One of them was expectation of privacy. Uh-huh. The other one was right to privacy. Do you think those things have become the same? Like, do you think if someone has become a celebrity and given up kind of their expectation of privacy, do you think they've also given up their right to privacy?
I'm not a lawyer, so I think those are kind of legal. Right is definitely a legal term.
I'm not really thinking of it in a legal term.
Yeah.
But do you think because someone has entered into a life where they expect that someone might try to take a photo up their skirt, do you think they also have given up the right to not have someone stick a camera up their skirt?
I think that I would say that if someone... I think this is a very complicated issue that goes beyond sexuality, but I think that if somebody is devoting a lot of energy to becoming a public figure, is hiring someone to send out press releases and manufacture an identity, and this is not just about like being creative, but about actively promoting yourself as a personality, then yeah, you are kind of creating a situation where people are going to be interested in your personal life. Like that's just sort of how humans act. Whether or not it's ethical or moral or good, I don't really feel like I can comment on, but I do think it's just sort of how it is. And I think that's all the time we have. But we'll be up here if you guys want to come ask us questions. I hope that was illuminating. And tweet about us and rate us high.